I'm Sheldon Richardson, and this is the Jets Blog Podcast.
Welcome back to the Jets Blog Podcast. I am your host, Corey Griffin, and with me, as always, on the other line is Brian Bassett. Hey, buddy.
Oh, hello. How are you doing? Are we having a good week?
I'm having a better week than I was Monday.
Yeah, I would say that's the same for me. That's the same.
It's been a good week. You know, the Jets are getting a little healthier. Jalen Marshall was back at practice, although Matt Slauson remains Matt Slauson. Wow. James Carpenter. James Carpenter remains sidelined, and Eric Decker remains a question mark. But they're getting their way back there, and Brandon Marshall is making all sorts of boat analogies, none of which really match up. But they're there. And we will talk about it all with our friend and your friend, Joe Caparoso of Turn on the Jets. We'll have him on in a little bit to break down the state of the New York Jets, and we'll also preview the Steelers between Brian and I, and then we'll also preview it a little bit with Joe as well. But before we do that, if you like this podcast, if you like any of SNY's other audio content, make sure that you subscribe to the SNY.TV audio network. For all New York fans, you can subscribe to all of SNY's audio content on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's the SNY.TV audio network. And please remember that when you find it on your iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast, to rate and review it. Give it 5 stars. Let us know how great it is, because obviously we're on it, so it's great. And then if there are Mets fans out there, which I know there tends to be a lot of Jets fans and Mets fans, there's a lot of overlap. Make sure you listen to the new Mets blog Q&A cast, where Matt Cerrone and Rob Bender commiserate about the wild card loss, and also look forward to the offseason and how the Mets can improve themselves in order to get a third straight postseason appearance in 2017. You definitely want to check that out if you are a Mets fan. And then obviously, you know, you can find us on there too, and you can search for the Jets Blog Podcast or SNY.TV Jets. And now that is out of the way.
Nice and done.
Thank you. I think I'm getting better with those. Now that that's out of the way, we will bring on our friend and yours, Joe Caparoso. Joe, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here. How you guys doing today?
We're doing good. Okay. We're good. Yeah. We're better than we were, as I said to Brian in the intro. I'm better than I was on Monday.
Time heals all wounds.
I was thinking the same thing, Joe. That's exactly what I was going to say. Thank you. Great minds think alike.
So where are you at, Joe? The Jets are 1-3. Obviously, the schedule was much talked about before the season. I know that, you know, if you're a good team, you have to beat the good teams on your schedule. But the way they've lost the last two are a little disheartening. Where is your head at heading into this back-to-back road trip stretch with the Steelers and Cardinals coming up?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there should be a huge degree of shock that they're 1-3. But similar to what you said, it's how they lost and being fairly non-competitive last week against Seattle, even though that was a one-possession game at one point early in the fourth quarter. You never really felt like the Jets had a chance to take control of that game. And obviously, Kansas City was kind of just an abomination of turnovers. And with, you know, the Jalen Marshall kick return bouncing right back into Kansas City's hands for a touchdown, and Fitzpatrick just pouring out all the second-half interceptions. So to, you know, play two teams who are likely to potentially be playoff teams or right in the mix for a spot, and not even really be competitive against either of them is fairly discouraging. I think what's even more frustrating is that, again, we knew this would be a tough start, but they really let an opportunity go week one to beat Cincinnati at home. That was a game where they were the better team on the field that day, and that was there to be won. And if you win that game, you know, it's easier to take an ugly two-game losing streak. Every team's going to hit a valley during the season. But if you win the games that you're in position to win, like the Jets were against Cincinnati, I bet you everybody's feeling a lot differently about the Jets season right now. They're 2-2 going into these two games, especially with how up and down Arizona's looked. But to be 1-3, you've really kind of pushed yourself up against the wall, and you need to find a way to pull off what I think would be a relatively big upset on Sunday in Pittsburgh, because you do not want to be 1-4 going on the road to play, yes, an Arizona team has been up and down, but you're still going in their building. They're still likely to get Carson Palmer back. And, you know, 1-4 is really, really do or die time if this week isn't.
You know, you bring up the Cincinnati game, and it really is a reminder that this is all about perspective, right? This is, we are 4 weeks into the season, and you know, like we talked about, the way the Jets lost the last two games and the way they looked outclassed against Seattle is disheartening. But what I said to Brian on Monday's post show was maybe it's just a matter of resetting our expectations. And it doesn't mean that this is a 4-win team, but maybe it's more of like an 8-9-win team with a chance to get to 10 if they, like you said, pull off an upset where they're not supposed to, like Sunday against Pittsburgh. I think that that Cincinnati loss is going to hurt for many reasons, one of which being a tiebreaker if the Jets do end up with 10 or 11 wins at the end of the season. But I think the thing that concerns me the most, and I've seen you talk about this on many levels, is just how discombobulated and uninterested the secondary looks on a regular basis.
It's very messy, and it's so discouraging to see multiple players at one position group all take a step back. Obviously, you have to start with Darrelle Revis, who's being paid to be one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL, and right now is probably the team's third best corner behind Buster Screen and Marcus Williams, which is troubling. And I don't know if he is hurt or what is going on with him, but he just does not look like the same guy we're accustomed to seeing. Even, you know, going back to the early part of last year when he was playing very good football, he's not as physical as he usually is. There's not as much. I don't like to be one of the sports psychologists who's reading people's body language, but in being there last week and, you know, sitting actually, you know, pretty close up behind their bench, he's usually someone who is very talkative, very demonstrative out there. He just seems a little checked out, and just in seeing how he's approaching, you know, his tackling, you know, you saw guys like Jeremy Maclin running through his arm tackles. To see him playing like that, it trickles down to the rest of the secondary. Calvin Pryor either looks hurt or very unsure of himself. Right now he's clearly thinking way too much out there. He looks like he did his rookie year, not like he did last season when he was one of the more effective safeties in the league. Same thing with Marcus Gilchrist, the guy who was coming off a pretty tough season in San Diego in 2014. Not a lot of Chargers fans were sad to see him go. Last year played very solid football, was very consistent and stable. This year he looks back to being the guy he was in 2014. So I don't know if that's a trickle-down effect from the top with Revis or there are bigger miscommunication issues, but all three of those guys have taken a big step back from what we saw last year.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Joe. And I think we look at the offense from last year, right? Let's just think about the offense from last year. It was kind of this lightning in a bottle. Everything seemed to be working. Yeah, there were, you know, some times where there were misfires, you know, during the season. But, you know, Marshall has a career year. Decker is, you know, just, you know, routinely the kind of steady contributor to the offense. You know, at the end of the season, they start getting more out of Bilal Powell, and, you know, Fitzpatrick's playing great. The scheme is you know, good. And now we're seeing this, you know, I hate always using the term, but regression in the mean. And we're seeing some of that on the defensive side, right? Was maybe last year a lightning in a bottle situation where, you know, Revis is re-energized coming back to New York. You know, Screen is coming in and confident, and Gilchrist is confident, and we've got Cromartie too. And so, you know, there's all these players and it seems to be working well. But you're right. I mean, and I don't know what else to do when I watch Darrelle Revis other than say, like, play the way we're accustomed to seeing you play or get off the field, because I can't do this, whatever you're doing, getting chucked around by Chris Conley. You know, like I can't keep watching this and, you know, want to see you keep playing. So where do they go from here? Do you think at this point it's clearly not a coincidence that all these three players are playing so poorly? Do they need to change the scheme? Do they need to shake up the personnel? What do you do defensively with this group at this point?
I think it's going to have to be a mix of both. I think you're going to have to move away from so many man coverage schemes. Obviously, you can't put Revis on an island as frequently as you used to, particularly if he's going against one of the better receivers in the league. You have to find ways to either double team certain top receiver talents or integrate more zone looks that the Jets maybe didn't do that much of last year. And yeah, you got to consider giving other personnel a shot. We're going to see more Justin Burris this weekend because Revis is out with an injury, and Burris has been good in limited action. He's going to take his lumps out there from time to time, but, you know, can he find a way to roll through that and become a valuable contributor on the outside? Do we see a little more of Rontez Miles and maybe Antonio Allen at safety in certain situations to help out with the tight end? At some point, you have to hold some people accountable. You saw a little more Miles and Burris last week. We're going to see more Burris by default on Sunday. I'm not sure what they're going to do with safety, but the problems have been consistent enough where you have to use your full roster and can't, you know, do the Rex Ryan mistake of just being blindly loyal to guys and not holding them accountable for continued poor play.
Okay, I have to throw a bomb here because I want to do this, so I'm going to. Do we think Darrell Revis, I want yes, no, and short answers from you two. Do we think Darrell Revis is coming down with the Antonio Brown Boogaloo flu for this weekend?
You go first, Corey.
I say no. I think that he's too pride. I was gonna say I think he's too prideful, although his pride might lead to him not wanting to get embarrassed by Antonio Brown.
Exactly.
But no, I don't think so. If he is, that says, you know, he's never been the type of player to shy away from a challenge. He's never been the type of player to shy away from playing, even when he's hurt, even when he's struggling. I would be surprised if that's the case. I also think that as much as he is struggling, you know, Justin Burris is a fifth-round rookie despite how he flashed at times in the preseason and despite, you know, how well Buster Skrine has played at times and Marcus Williams has played at times, they still would be a better secondary with Darrell Revis on the field than off.
If you would ask me this question at this time last year, I would have laughed and said it was insane. Mm-hmm. I still think the answer is probably no, but I do think that it might be a little more open to interpretation than we're used to seeing, considering since week 10 last year, we've seen Revis get destroyed by DeAndre Hopkins, get destroyed by Sammy Watkins, not play against the Giants and Odell Beckham, struggle a little bit with Dez Bryant when they played Dallas, despite I don't even remember who was playing quarterback, and then obviously have the problems with A.J. Green and Marquise Goodwin early in the year. So I don't know. I think the answer is probably no. I think he's probably not 100%, and he's going to, you know, be out a week or two to get to that point. But the fact that it could even be a question at this point for a guy who's getting paid $70 million is concerning.
I agree with both of you. I don't think that's the case, but the fact that we can even entertain the argument tells me all I want to know. And so when people, you know, 5 years ago, go hit the rewind button and hit 5 years ago, say, is Darrell Revis a Hall of Famer? You say, absolutely, yes. Absolutely, he is. And now we're in a place where we're saying, I don't know. I don't know if he wants it enough. And so, for as bad as Champ Bailey was at the end of his career, he was still going out there and busting his ass. And so, I don't know if we're seeing that. And maybe it is this injury, and maybe he'll come back next year gangbusters. But I think, right, we're having these conversations, and what this is all going to lead to, unless there's a quick turnaround and a couple weeks off helps him, is Darrell Revis a cuttable player this coming off season? I think, yeah. Personally.
It's entirely possible. We can have that conversation later in the year. Let's focus on more immediate things. Also, as a side note, speaking of cornerbacks, the Panthers cut starting cornerback Bene Benwickery after his rough day against Julio Jones. I'm sure he will have a wide, wide, wide market. He was the Panthers' starting cornerback for the last 2 years. They'll be interesting to see if I don't know if he has to go through waivers or if he's a vested veteran and he just ends up as a free agent, but I'm sure he will have a lot of interest. Switching from the cornerbacks to the other side of the ball, I think we'll focus a little bit on the offense before we get to my biggest gripe, which is Todd Bowles. Ryan Fitzpatrick is a lightning rod, to say the least. Geno Smith might be a bigger lightning rod than Ryan Fitzpatrick. Put them together and you have a lot of storm clouds hovering over this Jets offense, which is also missing maybe its most reliable wide receiver in Eric Decker. When do we see real doubt from the Jets and Ryan Fitzpatrick? Does it take another game? Does it take two more struggles? Will they give him another chance at home against Baltimore? Will they never lose faith in Ryan Fitzpatrick? Does the $12 million basically guarantee his job through the year, or is there a chance that we will see someone other than Ryan Fitzpatrick start games at quarterback, not for health reasons?
My gut feeling on seeing how the Jets have handled quarterbacks since Fitzpatrick has been elevated to the starting position is that we are still a few weeks away from them even considering making a change, even if Fitzpatrick does not play well against Pittsburgh and Arizona. I think he'll, at a minimum, get two more starts where he does not really have any type of leash on him. If he continues to be the worst starting quarterback in the NFL, which he is right now, then
Whoa. Blaine Gabbert, Case Keenum would like a word, Joe, okay?
They are scarily close, and the fact that Gabbert very well may have more touchdown passes and a higher completion percentage in QBR after this week when his number one receiver is Jeremy freaking Curley is terrifying. But yes, Blaine Gabbert is also awful. But it doesn't feel
excited that Jeremy Curley has found an offense that will feature him, right? I mean, hey, guys. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Anyway, sorry.
It's it doesn't feel like they're getting close to making that change unless Todd Bowles is a very good poker face. But if you ask me, I think if you're losing 17-3 at Pittsburgh at the half and Fitzpatrick has two more interceptions, it's time to make an in-game change. It doesn't mean it has to be permanent, but you need to at least show some type of accountability. But it feels like the Jets could go out and lose to Pittsburgh and Arizona with Fitzpatrick still being pretty mediocre, and they probably aren't making that switch till week 7 or week 8 or so.
I think it's a great point, right? Because I think when we saw last week when Fitzpatrick broke his thumb, and I mean, do you remember the whole thing where he couldn't change diapers at home, but he's taking snaps under center with the Jets? And just in terms of like the indication of what the coaching staff thinks about their backup in that circumstance, right? Like that's pretty telling what they think about Geno Smith or don't think about Geno Smith. Right. So if you're right, there is definitely situations where they could make an in-game switch. But if they start him, like, I think that's tectonic, right? Like there's no going back from if they make a switch to him as a full-time starter, they're not going back to Ryan Fitzpatrick anytime soon. Right. So they're going to, my point here being that they're going to take it as far out as they can before they would make that actual change, right?
Yeah. No, I agree. Joe, I'm curious your thoughts on the backfield. Brian and I have spent many a time debating this for the past 4 weeks. Bilal Powell has kind of seen his role slowly increase a little bit over the past few weeks. The last game was more of an even split than the previous three. But Matt Forte still seems to be the bell cow. Do you agree? And if not, at what point do you think we see more of Bilal Powell if we do at all?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely perplexing in the first 2 weeks of the year. I know Forte played well in those two games. I do think maybe some people think he played a little more better than he actually played just because of the 3 touchdowns against Buffalo, 2 of which were just, kind of falling in the end zone from the 1 yard line. But, to have him get 60-ish touches in 2 games, including especially on a short week while Powell was barely being used, he's going to have ramifications, and you're seeing it now. Forte's already banged up and looked pretty sluggish against Seattle, and also it's been frustrating to see the lack of creativity with how the Jets are using him and Powell. We're not seeing a lot of the two of them on the field together. We're not seeing enough of Forte in the screen game or used as a slot receiver, particularly now with Decker banged up. You can't just, keep throwing Forte in the A-gap like he's Chris Ivory. You got to find different ways to utilize him and find ways to more equitably split up the reps between Powell and Forte, which they should have been doing in week 1 or week 2 to help preserve Forte throughout the season so he's not dealing with injuries. So, I think those guys should be on the field together. I think we should be seeing more Forte in the passing game and probably a little less of him in the running game to get Powell more touches because he is still one of the more explosive players in the Jets offense.
Yeah, I think you're hitting it dead on, and he does need to get more involvement. But what about Todd Bowles? Corey, I know you have specific thoughts. You have more
feelings on Todd Bowles.
So why don't you go ahead? I'm letting you run the show today. So go ahead and talk about Todd Bowles and what's your question for him.
Look, I don't even know if it's a question so much as it's a screaming series of expletives when he punts on 4th and 2 from the 42 every freaking game. I am getting concerned. The conservative in-game management is one thing because I think that's how defensive coaches tend to operate unless they're kind of forced out of their comfort zone as Ron Rivera was a couple of years ago in Carolina. But the thing that concerns me is, like you mentioned earlier, Joe, is his stubbornness at times to stick to guys, which is weird because we saw him make changes away from Rex guys last year when they were struggling specifically at the linebacker position. And this year he seems to be sticking towards his coverages, sticking towards his plan, sticking by, Ryan Fitzpatrick and those sorts of guys and Darrelle Revis. Are you at all worried that he might have a little bit of that, this is my guys and this is my plan and I'm sticking to it in him?
Man, I hope not. I really hope Bowles doesn't go full Rex on me. He showed some promise as a rookie head coach. I think there were a few areas he could have improved on, but again, He was a rookie head coach. They showed good player development. He was holding players accountable on the field. The in-game management was not good, but you figured he would improve on that in year two, and he hasn't, right? The in-game management has not been good. He still coaches far too conservatively, and he's showing some early signs of being stubborn. So outside of seeing players regress, to see a coach who looked pretty promising as a rookie head coach show signs of regressing early in the year is concerning. Now, it's still four games, but Todd Bowles needs to come up with a big-time game plan and get his team to go get an upset win, because since he's taken over, the Jets, to their credit, have handled business when they've been the favorite, when they've been the better team. They didn't have a letdown against Tennessee or Dallas or Miami last year. They handled business in those games, which is important. That was something that they struggled with at times prior to that. But where is that big upset win? You know, they were underdogs against Cincinnati. They lost. They were underdogs against Kansas City. They lost badly. Underdogs against Seattle. They lost. Last year, I guess you could say they were underdogs in week two against the Colts, but as we went on to see, the Colts were pretty bad. And it's tough to really count New England in week 16 because of how many people didn't play in that game and how Belichick coached that game. It was a nice win, but, you know, were the Jets really huge underdogs at home to that roster that New England rolled out that day? I don't know. But now you're, you know, 8-point underdogs. Nobody expects you to beat Pittsburgh. Your back is against the wall here. Where is that sort of signature game early in his tenure where you leave saying, wow, you know, the Jets really cooked up a great game plan and threw it through the kitchen sink at Pittsburgh, found a way to get an upset and stabilize their season? He needs one of those type of games, or this season is going to spiral out of control quickly. It's not easy to come back from 1-5, and if the Jets can't pull off an upset, they're going to be 1-5 going into a completely empty stadium that's filled with Ravens fans in week 7.
Grim, very gory.
Look, I think it's too early, as you know, to pull the alarm button on Bowles, but as Joe says, there are definitely concerning things specifically regarding his growth and his refusal to change, or things that he struggled with as a rookie that haven't developed in year two. Last thing before we let you go, Joe, and you've given us plenty of your time, probably far too much of your time, to be honest with you. Looking ahead to this weekend against the Steelers, you mentioned them coming up with a specific game plan. Give me one thing the Jets have to do to win, and one thing that if you notice happening early on in the game, besides Antonio Brown catching an 80-yard touchdown pass on the first play of the game, where you just go, oh, crap, this isn't going to go well.
I mean, this is a kitchen sink game for the Jets. If you have a package you've been waiting to break out on offense or defense, this is the game to do it. You have to win special teams. You have to win the turnover battle. Their defensive line needs to take over the way they took over in week one, right? Pittsburgh will not have as quick of a release passing game as Seattle, which helped negate the Jets' pass rush up front. So you have to find a way to hit Big Ben, force some turnovers, make him uncomfortable to help cover for your secondary. And the Jets need Fitzpatrick to be, you know, the Fitzpatrick of December of 2015. If we see him incredibly inaccurate, leaving points on the field or turning the ball over in the first half, the Jets just can't overcome that against Pittsburgh. So if you come out and Fitzpatrick looks like he did against Kansas City, looks like he did in the fourth against Seattle, the Jets aren't going to be able to win. So hopefully he could stabilize, put together a competent game, and the Jets' money players can kind of step up and elevate him. Big game from Brandon Marshall, big game from Quincy Enunwa, big game from Matt Forte, big game from that defensive line, which is the focus of the defense. And hopefully that also, again, hope that maybe Pittsburgh set up for a little bit of a letdown. We know they're capable of that. You saw what Philly did to them. They're coming off a big win. They should be feeling very good about themselves. They're big favorites in this game. Could be a decent chance to get off to a fast start and pull them into an actual competitive, you know, one-score game in the fourth quarter.
Well said, Joe. Thank you very much. If you'd like more of that insight, make sure you check out turnonthejets.com. You can also find Joe at turnonthejets on Twitter, and find the Turn on the Jets podcast as well. Is an excellent listen for all Jets fans. Make sure you subscribe. Did I miss anything, Joe?
You know, let's just find a way to get a win. Nobody wants to have to deal with the early season insanities of a fan base watching a team go 1-4 and 1-5. We know that's no fun, and we've been there in 2014 pretty recently. So, again, you know, it's time for this regime to go out and get a big upset win, and all it takes is one big upset win before next week we're talking ourselves into saying, hey, the Jets are probably going to be 3-3 because Arizona's not that good. I think they got a good chance to get to 3-3, and that's what we were all hoping they could be after the first six. So there's a big difference between 1-4 and 2-3 going into Arizona.
Well said. Joe, thank you very much for taking the time out to talk to us today, and enjoy the rest of your day, enjoy the weekend, and hopefully enjoy Sunday.
Absolutely. You too, guys.
Joe made some excellent points, specifically pointing to this weekend. It's a kitchen sink game, as he says. It's time to unveil that.
Great thought. Yeah.
It is. Okay, so let's spin off that and preview the game quickly with that notion in mind. If this is a kitchen sink game, what are you pulling out of that kitchen sink to throw at the Steelers?
Well, I think one thing Joe mentioned, then you go, and then we can kind of go back and forth there. I think one thing is, and he mentioned it, is running out Bilal Powell and Matt Forte out of the same formations, right? I mean, even if it's empty sets or whatever, let's get both those guys out there at the same time, keep the defense guessing. Yes, their run defense, the Pittsburgh run defense has been pretty decent this year. So let's get both those guys out there and keep their run defense guessing a little bit, but maybe you can take advantage of that, you know, little mismatch, you know, in the passing game or, you know, some other wrinkle, because I think that's at least a good place to start, right? And we just have not seen enough of that.
Yeah, I think the thing, interesting thing when you talk about the passing game, look, guys have been open. Ryan Fitzpatrick has either underthrown the ball or missed guys. I mean, there's a screaming example of the third down before the Jets settled for a field goal last week against Seattle. Brandon Marshall was wide open 20 yards down the field with no one within 10 yards. Even if Ryan Fitzpatrick underthrows that ball, he's still walking into the end zone. The at least one of the interceptions was an underthrow. The pass to Marshall down the sideline. I mean, there's just plenty of things where Ryan Fitzpatrick has to be more accurate and more aware of his surroundings. On defense, if you're talking kitchen sink, I think they've got to get creative with the pass rush. They've got to disrupt the interior pocket. Maybe that means more of all those guys lining up and stunts and inside. Maybe it's less of Steve McClendon on running downs, saving him for passing downs, and maybe flipping Deion Simon or using Sheldon Richardson inside on running downs. Double, I think it might be a time to pull out some AAA gap blitzes. It's time to overwhelm the inside of that line and keep Ben Roethlisberger from hitting his back foot and being able to search the field.
Right, and I'm with you. And also on defense, another thing they have to, you know, throw out is they need to find a way to limit or minimize Antonio Brown. Like, we know what kind of player Antonio Brown is. You know, the lines he's able to put up on opposing teams. And I get it. And, you know, a lot of teams, they'll say, okay, we're just going to, you know, do our best to let that happen and we'll take away the rest of it. Well, guess what? Antonio Brown is the best skill weapon. I mean, you know, pardon Le'Veon Bell, but, you know, by far. And then you've got guys like Sammy Coates and Eli Rogers and Jesse James and Xavier Grimble. And I mean, these guys are terrible. Like, I mean, they're not great.
Well,
and so
I don't know that Sammy Coates is terrible. I just think he's kind of a one-trick pony.
He's a one-trick pony and he's inconsistent. And so my point is, I would much rather take my chances getting the ball, you know, thrown in single or zero coverage even to Sammy Coates than I would, you know, in zero coverage or one coverage to Antonio Brown. Like, bracket that guy, you know, triple that guy. I don't care. Like, you got to find ways to take him out of the picture, Darrelle Revis in the game or not in the game.
That's fair. Last quick thing, and we'll get out of here on this. What is your feeling for Sunday?
I do not see a win. I mean, I you know, and maybe that's a good thing, right? Like, I've been a little bold lately. So I just think their defense it's good, not great. And I think it's enough to, you know, keep the Jets at bay. And then right between Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown, you know, that connection is uncanny. And so I just worry that they're not going to be able to stop that connection. And they haven't shown me anything this season where they've really done a good job limiting those, you know, kind of goat players. And so I just don't see it. I don't think it's even going to be close. What about you?
I have the same feeling. I want to believe in Todd Bowles. I want to believe in this franchise. I want to believe in this coaching regime and this organization, that they have this kitchen sink game, this upset game in their back pocket. But this is just the worst possible matchup, to be honest with you. And if the offense was humming a little bit, I could see a shootout. I could justify a shootout that maybe they lose. But with the offense struggling so much, this is a Steelers offense with Le'Veon Bell back. I mean, they were using Le'Veon Bell out of the slot last week. So you're going to use Le'Veon Bell out of the slot against, I don't know, the third corner against Burris is outside. You move Screen inside.
And then
Williams. You have Justin Burris against possibly Antonio Brown one-on-one. I need to see it. I need to see it before I believe. And maybe that makes me a bad fan. I don't know. Maybe that makes me skeptical or a realist or whatever you want to call it. But I don't have a good feeling about this one. And you're right. Maybe that's a good sign, but we will see. We want to thank Joe for joining us. Joe Caparoso at Turn On The Jets on Twitter. Also Turn On The Jets on Facebook. You can also find him turnonthejets.com and the Turn On The Jets podcast. Speaking of podcasts, you can find our podcast on the SNY.TV audio network, along with all other SNY audio content. Jets, Mets, Rangers, Knicks, Giants, all of them. They're all there. Make sure you go there, subscribe, rate, and review us. You can find ours if you just want to subscribe to the Jets podcast. Just go to SNY.TV Jets or the Jets Blog Podcast, and it'll come up in iTunes or wherever you listen to the podcast. If you want to find Brian, you can find him on Twitter at Brian_Bassett.
And you can always send your taco picks to Corey at Corey Griffin NBC. He loves them.
I do. I had tacos on Monday night, or was it Tuesday? I don't know. Whichever day was National Taco Day, I had tacos, and they were so good. There's nothing quite as great as finding a new taco spot, like one that you had never heard of, and you just find it because it's next to your gym, and you eat it, and it's amazing. Brightens up your whole day, Brian. So shout out to Fatty Daddy Taco on West 9th Street. Wow. Thank you all for listening, and I hope you guys get to enjoy the new weekend. We'll be back with the Jets Blog post-game podcast on Monday. Until then, keep calm and jet on.
Fitzpatrick, you're my anchor!
This has been the Jets Blog Podcast, part of the SNY.TV audio network.